Hey folks, Randy Newberg here. Welcome to Leupold's Hunt Talk Radio. Hey folks, Randy Newberg here with another episode of Leupold's Hunt Talk Radio. I hope you're all doing well. Hope you had a Merry Christmas. Today, I have a couple guys from Washington State who are on the podcast, and I've been following this issue for over a year. Things have changed in Washington in such a dramatic way. And some of you might say, well, I don't hunt there, I don't fish there. Well, there's a huge story that provides lessons to all of us that has unfolded in Washington. If you think that your state, either through its appointment process of our public trustees, through the legislative process, who some of those are our appointed or elected trustees, or through the judicial process, if you think that you and your state and your opportunities as you have them today are just completely protected, well, these guys from Washington, Chris Hager and Dan Wilson, are going to tell us a story about what's happened there. And I think when you hear it, you're going to realize your comfort that your state is free and clear may not be what we all want it to be. And I know I can say that personally for my state of Montana. I probably get a little bit too comforted, maybe take for granted, maybe lackadaisical about the risks that some of our seasons, some of our hunts, some of our other types of activities that we have could be at risk. So I wanted to have Chris and Dan on here to talk about the Washington story in hopes that all of you would listen to it and think about it in the context of your home state, wherever you live. Because these are the kind of things that are going on out there. And the groups that I suspect these guys aren't going to use the term anti-hunter or anti-hunting to define who these groups are that push this stuff. I'm going to use that. That's what I'm telling you. They don't like hunting. They don't like the North American model. They don't like the fact that hunters, well, they like the fact that hunters and anglers pay for most of our wildlife management, but they don't like the fact that that in turn gives us a pretty, you know, strong voice, maybe more seats at the table than they'd like us to have zero seats at the table. But anyhow, the example of what happened in Washington is kind of the game plan that is often being considered, even in states with huge hunting and fishing participation like my home state of Montana or Wyoming or Idaho. These groups are trying to accomplish these same things. So thanks for being here. Want to make sure we recognize all these great sponsors who make this podcast possible. Leupold Optics, go to leupold.com, check out all their great stuff, and know that Leupold is there supporting hunting, conservation, access, shooting, Second Amendment, all the things that are important to what we do. And the same can be said for Nosler. Nosler is another family-held business in Bend, Oregon, who's put their shoulder to the wheel to support all the things essential to the activities we love. I mean, it just without all the things that these companies support, that we as people, as hunters support, none of this happens. So go to Nosler.com, check out all their great ammunition and components and bullets, and hopefully you'll keep those companies in mind. Mystery Ranch Backpacks. Mystery Ranch has been supporting us for a long, long time. They make great products. If you want to get 10% off your Mystery Ranch pack, you can go to the GoHunt.com gear shop. and put a Mystery Ranch pack in your cart. And if you check out with promo code Randy, they'll give you 10% off. And most other regularly priced items will also be discounted by 10% if you put them in your cart and you check out using promo code Randy. And we have Outdoor Class. Outdoor Class is an educational platform that I'm a part of, me and a lot of my friends, Corey Jacobson, Remy Warren, Hank Shaw, Jamie Teagan, John Barklow, and the list goes on and on and on. If you go to outdoorclass.com, sign up using promo code Randy, you're going to get 20% off. And now you also get Corey Jacobson's University of Elk Hunting course as part of that subscription. So you get two great informational platforms for the price of one subscription. Our own proprietary platform, our own subscription platform, FreshTracks.tv. If you go there, you'll get all of our content. You'll get most of it. You'll get all of it earlier than our anywhere else. Some of it will be exclusive, and you'll get it ad-free on a super high-quality viewing experience. So FreshTracks.tv will get you our FreshTracks Plus subscription. And it is application season, so you've been hearing these bonus podcasts we've been doing about applying and trends and changes and things that are happening. All things needed for that come from Go Hunt. I always say that Go Hunt provides me what I need for application season. Through all the draw odds, all the research strategy articles, they give me everything I need for research season, which are all these e-scouting tools as part of their mapping suite. And then they give me what I need for hunting season between their gear shop where you earn points and then their mobile maps or desktop maps, everything I need. So go to GoHunt.com if you sign up for Insider, use promo code Randy, and they'll put $50 of credit in their gear shop for you. So appreciate y'all being here. And when I hit the button from Washington, we're going to get to talk to Chris Hager and Dan Wilson, two guys who are very involved in what's going on there. And I think they got some good advice and some good insight for the rest of us who live in other states. And again, my word of caution, don't think this can't happen in your state. So thanks for being here. Well, folks, I told you we were going to have a discussion today about something that's really interesting. Some might say disturbing. Some might use other descriptions. But with me today are Chris Hager and Dan Wilson. They're very involved in what's going on in Washington. If you're in the hunting and fishing community, the wildlife conservation community, and you haven't been paying attention, by the time this podcast is over, I'm pretty sure your eyes and ears are going to be opened to what's happened in Washington in the last year or two. And hopefully you guys, Chris and Dan, are going to give us some ideas of what you're doing to straighten the ship, or whatever term you want to put to it. But anyhow, appreciate you guys being here. Chris, Dan, if you'd each tell the audience a little bit about your background, who you are, and why you're involved in Washington wildlife politics. Oh, I hate saying, oh, I said wildlife and politics in the same sentence, but that's what I'm going to stick with today. So anyhow, Chris, let the world know what you're up to and what's your background in this.
Yeah, no, thanks, Randy. One, appreciate you having us on. Like you're saying, I'm Chris Hager, the Northwest coordinator for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. So I work with Dan on a weekly, sometimes daily basis, especially when it comes to WDFW, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, and hunting policy in the state. So yeah, I'm located in Vancouver, Washington at this current point in time. And yeah, I'll have Dan introduce himself too.
Well, thanks, Randy. My name's Dan Wilson. I'm a Washington chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Angler. I'm the co-chair. Live on the eastern side of the state in Spokane, Washington. And I don't think when I started up with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, I would have ever ended up in a place where I was talking about wildlife politics, as you put it. But it's become a pretty overarching issue for us to deal with in Washington lately that's needing to be on the front line and stand up for sound policy and good management. And that's, seeing a vacuum there, we kind of jumped in feet first, and we've been swimming as hard as we can ever since for a couple of years now.
Well, I've followed your whole thing that started, I think it was in late 2021, when out of nowhere, even though your department recommended a spring bear hunt, either the quotas didn't get approved or the season didn't get approved or something. But I'm hoping that you guys can kind of start with some background about why this is such a cautionary tale to anyone in the country who has a wildlife commission that is appointed by political elected officials, and lay out some foundation and some background for where this conversation is going to go as we talk about some of these things.
Sure. The story's pretty long, and we've been at it for 2 years now, is about right, just around 2 years. But there's a lot of context in that background over those 2 years, and it even goes back a little further than that. And, I think that when we're talking to people within the hunting community, that understanding some of those details is really important. So if it ever sounds like I'm getting really down into the weeds on this, unfortunately, it is necessary to get all the way through the story. The best way to kind of frame this at a really high level is that we have our hunting seasons here in Washington, and those are relatively set, relatively uniform, and they exist underneath our game management plan that is administered and set up by our wildlife commission, usually on a 5-year, 7-year basis. But within each year, the commission votes to approve maybe the season dates exactly, or the tag allocations, if they're special draw, the exact number of tags, and maybe which units are going to be open for what things. And that applies to all of our species that we hunt in Washington State. And so 2 years ago or so, spring bear came up for a vote around its tag allocations, the exact date of the season, and the game management units that were going to be involved. And at that time, 2 years ago, there was a discussion that came out right there in the commission meeting that turned into a question less of, well, how many tags are we going to allocate? We're going to tweak these numbers, and turn into a discussion of, what are the ethics of spring bear hunting? Why would we allow a recreational spring bear hunt? And that is really almost the original kind of kernel to this whole thing, was what should have been a very standard procedural vote turned into this really expansive discussion around why we hunt bears. And it's interesting because a lot of the public comment that showed up to that original meeting seemed to know what they wanted to talk about as far as ethics of hunting bears and hunting in the spring and spring bears, whereas hunters didn't really show up at all for the public comment, because this same action happens tens of times every single year and has happened for years on end, where it's just a simple tag allocation discussion.
Yeah.
And that was the moment that started this entire process.
Whoa. So commissioners who are in your state, just like my state and like a lot of states, appointed by governors and then usually confirmed by one of your houses in Montana and Washington, I think they're confirmed by the Senate. So when you say that based on the comments, somebody got passed the word that, hey, we're going to talk about this in the context of ethics and what's right and wrong and not about quotas, you're saying some of the commission members maybe tilted their hand to these groups? And hunters thought, well, this is just, what's the quota range or what's the tag number? That, like you said, happens dozens of times every year. So why would anybody think it's worth a big comment?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I don't want to, I never want to malign or accuse a commissioner, especially of anything that I don't know that they would do. And I don't think our commissioners are out there normally operating with the worst intentions to subvert the system. But there did seem to be some cohesion between the public comments showed up that day to speak about the ethics of spring bear hunting. Mm-hmm. And that at that time, our commission had a membership composition that had some people who did not seem necessarily in favor of that hunting opportunity at the same time. Does that mean they were coordinated? I wouldn't make the assumption, but comments about concerns on spring bear were falling on ears that wanted to hear that is probably the right way to put it.
Yeah. Huh. Well, your commission has an interesting mandate. I think it's a pretty good mandate. actually, it's pretty heavy on what the commission should do. The commission shall attempt to maximize the public recreational game fishing and hunting opportunities of all citizens, including juvenile, disabled, and senior citizens.
It's a good sounding mandate. it's a great sounding mandate. You know, and that's one piece of it. I think there's four or five, you know, two sentence sections to the whole thing, and they talk about conserving wildlife populations, and so it's frequently described as having a dual mandate between conservation and providing commercial and recreational opportunities. And yeah, it seems like a robust bear population would be a sound opportunity for the public to engage with.
Yeah. Well, I would bet, Dan and Chris, that you guys who have to deal with this and sort out the personalities and the agendas and the whatever, you're probably going to be a little more hands-off than I am. I'm probably just going to call, you know, try to clear some of the bullshit out of the fog every once in a while. I'll let you guys continue, but I don't want you to be surprised if I say, you know what this sounds like? So I appreciate your diplomacy, but it's necessary because, you know, you guys attend meetings and work with people and you got to do what is the accepted protocols. But I think... already from what I've heard here and what I've read prepping for this podcast, when people are done hearing the whole series of events, it's going to leave them scratching their head saying, how did this happen in a great outdoor state like Washington? But anyhow, back to your background. It kind of started with that quota setting process for a spring bear hunt. And that's a spring bear hunt that's been around for what, 30 some years, something like that?
Something around there. It's around 30 years, but it goes back a little bit further when it comes to more management hunts that were for timber recreation or for timber damage. So it's hard to say, like, this is the exact day we started hunting or the exact year we started hunting spring bear in Washington, but it has been a long-standing opportunity in this state.
Yeah. So where did it go from there?
This is where the, you know, political story and that background stays really important is we have, based on our commission structure, we have 9 people on our commission. We are supposed to have 9 people, 3 at large, 3 representing Eastern Washington, 3 representing Western Washington. Now, at that time, we only had 8 people appointed to the commission. And when that vote happened, it fell onto to move forward with the spring bear season, with the tag allocations and the updated game management units. It fell to a vote for those 8 commissioners, and it came down on a 4-4 split. And in doing that, it failed to approve a spring bear season for that year. So we did not have a spring bear season that year, but it also didn't answer any questions in the big picture of things. It just meant that they reached excellent example of gridlock, and it just kind of died that year for 2021, but nobody really knew what that meant.
And just to keep a timeline real quick, so that vote happened in November of 2021, which kind of pushed a big domino into effect for flagging this as a pretty critical, like, holy crap, you know, how did the hunting and fishing community, or really just the hunting community, you know, let this one slip by? And, you know, everybody just started perking up, like saying, like, this, did this actually just happen? In between November of 2021 to February of 2022, a lot of things happened and were put in motion to get the public more involved, to get hunting organizations more involved, and to get to try and reverse or to have a recount on that vote. But Dan, you can go take it from there if you want.
So go ahead, Randy.
Yeah. I just want to make sure, because sometimes people confuse their agency, you know, the scientist biologist, as this is their this was their decision. I want to make sure people understand that a commission can have a distinctly different view of things than what the scientists, biologists, and directors, you know, managers within a wildlife agency can have. So at this time, when this all happened in November 2021, my understanding was your department thought this was just fine, that they recommended this hunt. Is that correct?
That's 100% correct. And to even, like, put, you know, numbers to it, you know, Director Suswind, who's the, you know, director for the entire Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, and then Dr. Stephanie Simek, who at the time was the Washington Department and Fish and Wildlife's carnivore section manager, so a leading biologist in studying bears, predators in the state of Washington, and has had a long career in that as well. But to kind of go, you know, well, let me back up. So both of these people, Dr. Simek and Director Suswin, testified not only at the hearing in November, but in later hearings, as this kind of kept on getting brought up at commission meetings, publicly testified that this is a viable and sustainable hunt. And it's really backed up by what we have for science right now. You know, if we look at a 10-year harvest rate for spring and fall bear averages, we're looking at 8.2 and 9.5 as the extremes. So 8.2 at the lowest percentage and 9.5 percentage of take of the entire population. And there's an estimate of 18 to 21,000 adult black bears statewide.
Okay.
So those percentages fell completely within objective, which the department sets a 9% to 11% harvest rate annually. Okay. So those harvest rates, you know, on both ends of the spectrum fell either well below or stayed well below the high of those annual or of those annual objectives.
Okay.
So yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that people understood that and they're clear, because I think where this story goes is sometimes science is not, it's inconvenient, or data and biology and the professionals who work on that every day, sometimes what they provide is inconvenient to people who have a different agenda or opinion. So I just wanted to do that. So go ahead, Dan, continue with how these dominoes started kind of falling here.
Yeah. And, Chris can, it's been a long and winding road. So Chris should feel free to interrupt me if I'm missing any of the details. I've got some gray hair and lost some hair over this whole thing over the last 2 years. But, right around that time in November 21 that Chris was referring to was also when one commissioner opted to resign, who had seemed pretty opposed to a spring bear hunt. And we had another commissioner step down at the end of their term. And we ended up finally at a commission full of 9 people, which is something that everybody wanted. So we couldn't end up in this 4-4 tie vote. So things just fail anymore. The problem with that is that, you know, some of those commission appointments don't seem to have been ones that are advantageous for fulfilling the mandate for opportunity, and at times seem opposed to fulfilling even responsible conservation mandate. And maybe the worst part of that is that, you know, according to the state laws and statutes, groups of hunters and anglers are some of the people who should have been consulted on those commission appointments. And, mm-hmm. and we weren't in the room for that. And so moving into the next year, into 2022, we ended up with a commission that felt pretty stacked against hunters. And even though it sounds like Spring Bear kind of ended in 2021, obviously there was a second half of that story, which is the entire situation this last year of how we tried to get it back and where we are now in the situation.
And I definitely want to highlight real quick, like, you know, Dan was saying that, like, okay, BHA wasn't a part of those conversations. So we weren't, you know, one of those stakeholders that were, you know, made aware of the appointments that were about to be put into those seats. It was a blanket, what are the words I'm looking for? This isn't a boo-hoo BHA wasn't involved or wasn't asked to get to be a stakeholder in this conversation. This was like an all-out no hunting group was asked to be involved in these conversations. Mm-hmm. And that's what we were really finding more and more of when we were reaching out to our partners that we've worked with in the past, or other groups that, you know, have a little stake in the game or have a bigger stake in the game in the issue. Nobody was getting communicated. And that was from hunting groups to environmental groups to even fishing groups weren't even getting asked to be looked at or to be included in these conversations.
So that leaves the question, who was asked to be part of these conversations then?
Well, I think, you know, if we were painting a picture and telling a story, that Chris just really highlighted one of the key narrative points of what's going to go on throughout the rest of this conversation, which is that's when a lot of groups in Washington started checking in with each other on the hunting side and saying, you know, were you involved? Did you know these names coming ahead of time? You know, there were conversations with tribes at that time who as co-managers, they were even shocked by some of the names that came out. But yeah, the question of who was in the room for making those decisions and who gets appointed, we don't know exactly who was there, but we do know that some of the groups who'd been organizing to try and get rid of spring bear hunting in Washington seemed very excited by who got appointed and seemed to possibly know some of those names before the rest of us did.
In other words, boy, because here's what we always hear, right? Well, we got to worry about the people in the middle. You know, there's 10% who hunt, 10% who are anti-hunter. There's 80% in the middle. So you're saying that the 10% who might be against hunting, if you want to use a tag of anti-hunter, point being, they had the ear of your governor when these appointments were being made.
It sure seems that way without any proof. So I can't sit here and accuse, but they were very happy with who came in, and it seems like they have some personal relationships outside of commission meetings with some of those new commissioners. And Randy, you mentioned that those, you know, 10% kind of numbers, these same groups are people who are, really smart about their tactics and how they frame their arguments. And, you know, if you talk about hunting in Washington represents 4% of the population, they're more than happy to come into commission meetings and say that that means that 90% or 96% of Washingtonians don't hunt or are opposed to hunting.
Yeah. So they want to claim the microphone.
They claim the middle.
Yeah.
They claim every time. Oh.
Okay, so you guys get some new commissioners that now it's looking like a pretty stacked deck. So of your 9 people, you got 3 from the east side, which being familiar with Washington, you guys have asked to be West Idaho at times. There's probably a little bit of a difference of philosophies there. You got your mandate is absolutely three from east side, west side. The other three seems like they can float wherever and be at large. So what do you end up with after that process?
Well, the one interesting thing too that might frame up later on in the conversation is the at-larges can be from anywhere, and there can be the three, and then there's the three east and the three west, but there can't be more than one commissioner from any county.
Right.
And the reason that becomes important is when you look at Eastern Washington, my home, which I love, but when I look at the density of people, you're really only talking about two or three counties. And that's where the majority of the Eastern Washington population is. And so you only end up with a few possibilities to get an appointment over here without doing a lot of effort to try and dig people out who might not have as high of a profile. Mm-hmm. In the last round, the commissioners we added were Melanie Rowland and John Limcool and Tim Reagan are the three most recent commissioners. Melanie Rowland lives in central Washington, but east of the Cascades. Tim Reagan is somewhere from the coastal area, I think Anacortes. And John Limcool is from Wenatchee, which is smack dab in the middle of the state. Right. So those are who we have that were the most recent appointees. And, all three of them have at one time or another said at least one alarming thing if you're a hunter or an angler, but I'd say pretty alarming if you're a conservationist who doesn't even hunt and fish.
Yeah. So calendar's rolling forward now. You got nine commissioners. Did you end up ever getting a spring bear hunt or any of your other hunts and your representation and voice further muted by some of this?
Yeah, it stays in kind of a weird back and forth period for a bit with there's ongoing public notice. And at this point, backcountry hunters and anglers and so many other groups that we had been in communication with throughout the commissioner appointment process, really activating their base and, things are coming out in the press about it, in mainstream press that's talking about outdoor situations. So there's more and more energy kind of building up around this spring bear in a public sense. But, at the commission level, the battle lines are getting drawn a bit harder between some of those groups that seem really strongly and vocally opposed to spring bear, calling it trophy hunting and, shooting cows as soon as they're cut or shooting sows with calves with cubs is a concern, and that we're shooting right out of hibernation and it's unethical. And, that's getting kind of picked up in some press, and they're pushing it, and we're starting to align and talk about what it actually looks like.